The Real Estate Revolution is provided for general information only and should not be treated as a substitute for professional advice. Please consult your trusted financial advisor, real estate professional, or attorney before making any real estate or financial decisions. Please remember, when following advice, your results may vary. And all information covered here is not intended to cover all aspects of the subject material, but rather a sample of issues the hosts and guests consider important.
With the latest in real estate news, you can learn all the facts that will keep you on track and use them any way you choose.
And now it's time for a power hour from America's trusted resource for everything real estate. Everything in the real estate industry is in a constant movement of change. It's a real estate revolution with your host, Victoria Riva De Nera, and her co-host, Scott Forcino. Welcome to the Real Estate Revolution.
Revolution.
Good evening and happy Monday. I'm Victoria Riva De Nera, president of the Northeast Division for Exit Realty Corp International, and I'm also a licensed New York State real estate broker for the past 25 years. And I'm here again today, tonight, at the WFAS studio, a.k.a. the Man Cave, with my co-host Scott Forcino, for our very first show of the year for 2016. Happy New Year, Scott.
Thank you. You too. It's a day in tonight, yeah. And it's our first little touch of winter, so we're bundled up.
It's very cold out.
Yeah, for the kind of a change.
Yeah, we really can't complain, though.
No, I'm getting a little bit spoiled with the
Florida weather. The Florida weather in New York. I brought it back, right? But it didn't last very long.
This is winter, so I'm here.
It is winter. So how was your New Year's?
Good. Calm, casual, met with friends.
Where were you?
In Ormonk, New York. It was my brother and friend Mario, and the kids running around on those hoverboards. If you've seen all these accidents that you see on ERs and hoverboards.
Yes, I heard, and they're blowing up. I heard all these crazy things about these hoverboards.
I'm glad mine don't have it, but I've seen some kids hitting walls. That's a nice segue into walls for our guest tonight.
Okay. So, you were in Ormonk, New York. Okay, but not New York City.
No, that's Westchester County.
Yeah, I'm very, very well aware where Ormonk is. I'm asking you, did you go into New York City at all for New Year's? Because that's the number one destination for New Year's Eve.
For amateurs, right. I did that when I was a kid.
This was probably the best year to be in Times Square because of the warmth. I've watched on TV, of course, because I wouldn't go there, people freezing for hours and hours and hours in years past.
I went there when I was 18. I'm hearing that this year people wore diapers because you're there from noon until midnight.
Yeah, I would never do that.
I mean, that's beyond, we're going to hear from Peter whether he thinks that's crazy.
Shh, don't tell Peter. Yeah. So the top three places for New Year's Eve celebrations. We know New York City is number one. Number two, what do you think?
Florida.
Very good. Where in Florida?
Miami.
No.
Disney.
Disney. That's
makes sense,
right. Disney World. Very good, Scott. Good. You're getting
intuition.
Better at this.
Yep, these tough ones.
What's number three?
Vegas.
Skiing.
Las Vegas. That's right.
Wow.
Tim. Very good,
Vegas.
Tim.
Right.
So, in Times Square, the New Year's Eve ball was first dropped in 1907. Back then, the ball was 700 pounds. It was embellished with 25-watt bulbs.
25.
Big difference from today.
Yep.
It's definitely not 700 pounds. You know how much that ball weighs today?
1,200 pounds?
It weighs 2,000. No, I'm sorry, 2,000. It weighs 11,875 pounds, and it has 2,668 Waterford crystals on the ball.
Well, I have a friend, and I think Tim knows the gentleman as well, who is the 30 Rock, he's the persona on Twitter of the 30 Rock tree, and he's in a Facebook tweet war with the New Year's Eve ball.
What's a Facebook tweet war?
They go at each other. Twitter war and face. They go.
I'm making fun of them. You know that, right?
The 30 Rock tree has an ongoing yearly skirmish with the New Year's Eve ball.
Hmm.
these inanimate objects.
Interesting.
Someone's texting me now.
So I have some other fun facts, because I know you love them so much, and you're going to love this one the best, because you're Italian. Do you know what Italians do in Italy on New Year's Day, not New Year's Eve? It's something they have to wear that's very customary.
I don't know.
Okay, so you don't have the old Italian grandmother?
Not anymore, but I mean, let me hear if I can recall.
Okay, in Italy, it is customary to wear red underwear on New Year's Day to bring good luck all year. You've not heard that,
okay,
huh?
No, I haven't.
It's true.
Maybe not the whole country, I don't know.
Okay. In Colombia, Cuba, and Puerto Rico, some people stuff a large doll with all the year's memories of the past. And then at midnight, they set it on fire. To let go of all the bad memories.
Right. Let it go.
Yep, let it go.
Like in Frozen, just let it go.
Let it go. You're going to sing for us?
No, I've heard it 1,000 times, though.
I bet you have, right? With the two little girls, right? So, there are superstitions about food on New Year's Eve. Heard any of those?
Nope.
It's considered good luck to eat black-eyed peas, ham, and cabbage. It's believed to bring wealth. But it's bad luck to eat, and you probably ate one of these, I bet, lobster or chicken.
On New Year's Eve, I ate neither, but I have steak.
Ah, okay. So you'll have a good year,
I
then.
I hope to, based on that.
Yeah, that would be nice. So any New Year's resolutions?
I didn't do the New Year's resolutions like everybody all
year. Yeah, I don't do them either.
No, I didn't mean to just keep your head down and get good work done.
Yep.
That's what we're doing.
I agree. And we all try to stay healthy, so I think we're where we need to be. But the number one, you know, is lose weight. Yep. Number two, eat healthy. Number three, exercise more. Number four, still stop smoking. I'm always amazed when I find out that people smoke in this day and age. But they do.
Yeah, they do. I've seen recently people smoking outside or keeping with kids around.
Yes.
Secondhand.
Did your parents smoke when you were a kid?
My dad did when I was a kid. My mom never. But, you know, that stuff.
Did he smoke in the car with the windows up?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I know. It was terrible.
No seatbelt.
Right? No seatbelt. And we're alive.
Somehow, right.
Somehow we're alive. All right, so number five, stick to a budget.
Yeah.
Number six, get organized.
Mm-hmm.
Number seven, save money. I'm going to stop there because I know you hate these.
I think that people need to do all of them, and I'm sure they pledge to do so.
Yes, I think so, too. So, we are here at WFAS, and this is a live show, The Revolution. And anyone who would like to join us can certainly tune in on WFAS AM, which is where probably most people are listening. But we are also, we video stream, we are also on periscope.tv/homesearchTV, where you can actually see a video of us. We're also on meerkatapp.com/Tim Judge, who's our videographer. And we're live streaming on Facebook. We can be found on Facebook/Tim Judge. And we're also on YouTube/HomeSearchTV. So we are right now live streaming on four different social media platforms. Plus, we're on the radio and we're online. How cool is that, Scott?
And we're here in person again.
And we're here in person in the man cave. Because
yes.
We just cannot get any women in this room. I don't know why.
We had our friend Melissa as broke the gender barrier once.
We did. Once. Once. Just once.
She's still alive.
She is. She is still alive. Yes, it wasn't a bad experience at all. So, what are we talking about today on the show?
We're talking about new construction trends in Hudson Valley and probably overall. We're talking about acquisition of properties, I guess, through former lenders and, I guess, auctions of acquisition of properties from lenders.
I know we have an amazing guest, someone I know for a very, very long time, all the way back to my days in Staten Island.
Hmm.
I think it could be said that I probably followed him up here because I think he was up in the Hudson Valley before me.
So, left the island and come up north.
Yes. Very few people do that, by the way. The natural progression is to go from Staten Island to New Jersey.
What about Long Island?
Well, that's usually Brooklyn to Long Island or Brooklyn to Staten Island. But once you're in Staten Island, then you usually go to New Jersey.
Gothels, I get it. Okay.
I did not do that. Nor did our guest. So would you like to introduce our guest?
Yeah, this is Peter Berman. And I'm going to give you some highlights of his background and accomplishments. Peter was the president in 2011 and 12 of the Builders Association of the Hudson Valley. He is in the National Association of Home Builders. He is the force behind several successful companies in diverse industries, and he personifies an entrepreneur. He grew up in and around the construction industry, and he started his career as a third-generation builder and project manager. There is... We're going to hear about the Equilibrium Brewery. That interests me. And that he was awarded a $200,000 in grants. Mr. Berman is also a certified graduate builder and a certified green professional by the NAHB. And Peter remains actively involved in his real estate roots. His construction company, called the Ruby Group, continues to develop properties and supervise construction regarding large tracts of single-family or multi-family homes and commercial projects. And I want to just also mention that Peter's a published author with too many articles to list. it looks like the Library of Congress here. He is a lifelong learner, and Peter graduated from Syracuse. That makes you an orange man, I guess, right?
Correct.
And the Carrier Dome, right? And he currently serves on the board of directors for the Chamber of Commerce and Leadership Orange. Lastly, he, in 2012, I think even 2013, was 40 under 40 from New York's Professional Builder magazine. He looks a little older, but he received the Rising Star Award.
It's a good thing you didn't say that about me, Scott.
You could say that about a guy. But congratulations and welcome. We're here to get some information and learn a little bit about new construction and what you think is happening.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, we're really happy to have you.
You're right, Victoria. New Jersey was the natural progression. We got lost in western New Jersey and wound up in Warwick, New York. So.
That's pretty
but
funny.
But we did look there.
Yes. Well, Warwick is beautiful. So, will 2016 be a year of new home sales?
2016 in the Hudson Valley is not going to be a year of new home sales. Mm. It'll feel like a year of new home sales because it'll be better than 15 was, but we have a long way to go. If you look at the current stats, we have about 490,000 new home starts. And while that sounds great compared to just 4 years ago when we had 270,000 new home starts, it's the lowest. It's the last time it was this low was September of 1991.
Wow.
So based on the bio you read, you can figure out that I wasn't here doing this in 1991.
That's a generation ago.
That is literally a generation ago.
Yes.
I was just finishing high school, sitting at home with my dad, hearing stories of what it was to build in 1991. So we went through a really scary time. 2008 was by far the lowest time. A lot of different people in different industries had trouble, right? People talk about their business was off by 20%.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the new home construction business, our business was off by 80%. So people would say, oh, yeah, that's the same. No, that's the opposite. It's the inverse, right?
Absolutely.
We were gone.
Now, yeah. Would you attribute that to lending or the bank's refusal to enter the market?
So lending was a big issue, but the bigger issue was just that people weren't in a mood to buy, right? So much of the decision to purchase a home is based on confidence. You have to have confidence that tomorrow you're going to have a job. If you're not sure whether or not you're going to have a job, whether or not you can pay your bills, you're not going to consider buying a home, never mind a new home.
Right.
The other thing that happened was we had what we call in economics irrational actors, right? Banks were taking these properties back and just had to get rid of them. So they were dumping them at a low price. Mm-hmm. They were dumping them at a price that was below what we could afford to build at.
Right. So the competition just didn't make sense for you.
Right. There just was no market. It wasn't even, you know, competition sort of assumes that there's two people going after the same thing. We were in a position where to sell a new home in the Hudson Valley under the mid 300,000 range is really challenging.
Right.
When you add up all the costs, it just doesn't work in very many places.
Absolutely. Now, there were also construction loans that were pulled. I know IndyMac back then was, they were really big with construction loans, and I know they pulled out of everyone's construction loan. That really hurt a lot of the builders and a lot of individuals that were building.
That was an issue for a lot of builders. We were lucky. One of the things that held us back was we were always conservative. So we were never as big as some of the other people because we were just a little bit more cautious. When we came up here in 2001, we started buying land up here. I would meet a banker and we'd have a conversation. They'd say, well, come in and sit down. I would say, well, there's nothing to talk to a bank about because we haven't started construction. We just bought land. And they would say, well, we'll lend you some of the money for that land. What?
Wow.
Nobody's done that since the 1980s. But that's what banks were starting to do. Here in the Hudson Valley, banks were lending builders.
And this was in 2001.
This was 2001 through, let's say, 05, maybe even 06.
Right, as the market was going higher and getting crazier and crazier.
Higher and higher and higher. And the local banks would say, oh, no, we'll lend you half the cost of the land. Then they were willing to lend you the land plus the infrastructure, mm-hmm. and it was getting to a dangerous point. What happened to us, we got really lucky with the timing. We bought some land in 2001. We were getting ready to move in 04, my wife and I. So we were looking for more projects, right, to feed this pipeline that we wanted to develop up here that we had had in the boroughs in New York City. And I would go out with a broker, and I'd look at some property, and they'd give me comps, mm-hmm. right, for the audience. Those are comparables. That's what a house might sell for. And we'd go back and write it all down on a piece of paper and go, you know, wood plus labor plus roofing plus kitchen cabinets equals X, and the sale price equals the same X. It doesn't work.
Right.
And I called the broker back, and I go, are you sure about those comps? This doesn't work. You go, too late. It already sold.
Hmm.
I mean, this is in the course of a week. So we would do, I was doing this day in and day out, and eventually we just stopped.
Right.
We thought that I didn't understand the Hudson Valley. Turns out, by being the outsider, I was lucky. I wasn't caught up in, well, this one's going to buy it, and I know that guy's smart, so I'm going to buy ahead of him.
Mm-hmm.
We were just looking at the numbers.
Right.
And so we were
lucky. And that's
lucky.
Really what saved
you. We were very lucky that mm-hmm. we only had a couple of houses under construction.
We did see a lot of that. And I remember even working with you back then, too, where, you know, people were just outbidding and outbidding and outbidding, and a lot of them really did get very hurt when the market dropped.
Absolutely. The builders and the customers.
Yes, very much. If you'd like to join in on this conversation or if you have any questions, please give us a call at 914-693-5700. Again, that's 914-693-5700. We're just going to go to a quick break, and we'll be back with Pete Berman.
Have you ever been disappointed because something important you planned went wrong at the last moment? Doesn't that make you really frustrated? That won't happen at Movement Mortgage, where your entire loan process is designed to remove the stress and hassles from getting your loan approved quickly. Movement Mortgage is an Inc. 500 fastest growing company in 42 states, including this area, working hard for you. How? At Movement Mortgage, your loan is processed in 7 days, and we underwrite in the first 48 hours. We expedite your loan and update you continually. When buying your first home, upgrading, downsizing, or even refinancing, call your Movement Mortgage team today. The movement of change is here for you with Movement Mortgage. Call Movement Mortgage at 1-800-516-2119. That's 1-800-516-2119. Movement Mortgage is an equal housing lender. NMLS ID 39179.
The movement of change is here. Movement Mortgage.
This is Paul Oster, the nation's credit repairman, and I want to help you improve your credit. As the CEO of Better Qualified, I've helped thousands of people over the past 10 years. I'm the credit expert for Fox Business News and all the major networks. I'm a certified FICO pro that uses the consumer laws to help delete negative information off of credit reports. We have a debt elimination program that focuses on the laws surrounding collections, judgments, and charge-offs. You could be entitled to up to $1,000 per violation. Call now for your free credit consultation. 888-533-8138. That number again, 888-533-8138, or visit us on the web at betterqualified.com.
Whether you're looking to buy a new home or refinance, Annie Mac Home Mortgage offers competitive rates, a wider array of products, and best customer service available in the lending industry. They have renovation loans for the almost perfect home that just needs a little work. If you want to get a new home built, they have construction to permanent loans with competitive rates and quick closings. Annie Mac Home Mortgage has federally insured FHA loans for borrowers who have had credit problems in the past and no down payment. VA loans for current and former members of America's Armed Forces. Whatever loan product, our licensed mortgage originators will walk you through every step of the process and take the time to work with you individually. Talk to us. Annie Mac won't just get you a mortgage, they will get you the right mortgage for you. Call Annie Mac Home Mortgage at 1-888-242-1313. That's 1-888-242-1313. Annie Mac Home Mortgage is an equal housing lender. NMSL 338923. Annie Mac Home Mortgage is a licensed lender by the Colorado Mortgage Company Registration.
Call Annie Mac.
And we're back. We're here in the studio with Pete Berman. And if you'd like to join in the conversation, 914-693-5700. We are talking about new home sales in 2016. And Scott, I know that during the break you had some topics that you wanted to touch on.
I mentioned to Pete that I want to ask him why someone wants, I mean, for the obvious reason, there may be some more esoteric reasons why someone wants new construction.
So new construction has a ton of advantages. The biggest one is that most people, when they buy a home, they then set out on this big adventure of remodeling, which is, you know, you mentioned earlier you have some little kids at home, and there's a couple of crisis rites that people go through in their life, right? They say getting married, having children, buying a home and renovating it. Buying a new home is a much easier process, especially with a well-qualified builder. What you're going to see is, depending on where you come in during the time of construction, if you're there before they start, you know, the world's your oyster. You know, whatever your budget is, we can create every customization you can imagine. And sometimes those are things that just you would want. Sometimes those things have general appeal. And they go from a wide range. There's things like upgraded countertops to rooms that are repurposed, or maybe a bathroom that's set up a little bit differently that has a little bit of a bigger makeup area, Scott. I don't know.
Not for
some
me.
People
yeah,
like makeup.
Show, yeah.
Doing your hair and stuff.
Do you think that he's a pretty boy?
He
is a pretty boy.
He certainly
right?
put some time into his appearance today, which we all appreciate.
I didn't even shave, I don't think.
Yeah.
And then, you know, all the way down to specialized rooms, whether they're man caves or people have really oversized closets that are really well done today. So that's an advantage the new home has. The other big thing that new homes have today is the quality of construction, energy efficiency, longevity of the way things are built today is drastically improving. You know, the 80s and the 90s probably saw a dip in the quality of construction nationally. Fortunately, it's improved a lot. The energy efficiency, both as part of code, energy code is required to get better, but also in terms of the customers demand it. You know, there's a lot of talk about green.
Yeah. Actually easy to be green these days.
Yeah, we get that question a lot. It means different things to different people. What we've found over the years is that the customers want it. They want to ask the question and get a good, legitimate, qualified answer that's honest and frank, but they also don't necessarily want to pay more for it.
Mm-hmm.
So as a builder, you're forced to find ways to build homes that are more energy efficient, give the customer a better product, but also that are cost savings.
Mm-hmm.
Two parts that I want to mention, we mentioned, is clients of mine in the past have enjoyed the warranties. So now the roof and the foundation, even the appliances, are factors that you might not have to deal with for 15 or 20 years. So, I mean, that's a real, to me, a big advantage to new construction in that you remove that headache, and because you're buying those high-level countertops and finished and appliances, you're able to actually finance it. So if you're going to do 20% down, other than that, you'd have to pay 20% down and then buy those things from whatever craftsman or provider. But now you get to finance those. I mean, how do you handle that? There's a price for the house, and then what? The upgrades or the extras?
Yeah, one of the goals that we try to do is we try to get all of that figured out before we go to construction to the largest extent possible. That does a couple of things for us. One is it allows us to be more efficient in building. If you see a builder building a 3,000 square foot colonial in the Hudson Valley and it's taking them 14 months, that's really inefficient. They're not making money. They're just kind of bumbling from one step to the next. And part of that is the pre-planning, right? Once you go out to build, you want to have everything done. Mm-hmm. We tell homeowners that literally we're not going to start the foundation until they've picked their kitchen cabinets.
Mm-hmm. Wow. How long should it take then?
Depending on the weather and where you start, and it also depends on your view of the timeline, which that sounds a little bizarre, right? Time is a set continuum.
Right.
Other than Back to the Future, we can't alter it.
Right.
But
okay.
It's important to recognize in our business that we're all in together selling customers their homes where they feel safe and their biggest financial investment. Their perception of time is different than ours. As a builder, I perceived how long does it take to build a house? Well, I got the permit, and then I got the CO, and now I'm done. Well, to the home buyer, that's not the process. They typically are signing the contract anywhere from 2 to 8 weeks before I get the permit.
Okay.
And then I get the CO, and it takes another 2 weeks to line up the bank and the moving truck and all those things. So we tell people to expect it to take us 4 to 6 months, which means 5 to 8 months to them, depending on the time of year where we start.
Plus, they sell their own home, Victoria. What about, that's another part that you have no involvement with, their own individual sale of where they're living now.
Well, their home should have been sold prior. If they need to have their home sold in order to qualify for a mortgage, it should have been sold, or at least
in the process,
by the time they sign contracts on new construction.
we have the good fortune being most of our building being west of the Hudson River.
Mm-hmm.
Most of our new home buyers are actually first time. Whether they're
that makes true, it a lot easier.
Right. And if they're not true first time, they're like those requalified first time home buyers where they haven't owned a primary residence for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
They're renting, they might be living with a family, or they sold and they're living with a family. One of the things we don't do is we won't start construction on a house that's got a sale contingency.
And you shouldn't.
When you say first time, I mean in some areas like some parts of the city, the price point may not be possible, right, for first timers. And in the Hudson Valley, I would think there's lower prices, which might avail more people to that pool.
Right. In the Hudson Valley, west of the Hudson River, you get a lot of first-time home buyers buying in the, say, 300, 350 to 425 range.
Now, you're talking primarily Orange County.
Orange, Ulster, Sullivan.
Okay.
Less than
Sullivan.
Far Orange
there,
and Ulster primarily. That's where we're active every day. And even Dutchess sort of falls into it. Westchester, more of your new home construction in Westchester is infill lots, and it does tend to be move up because the land cost is so expensive.
Right.
Those buyers are able to commit to a higher extent, or they're probably putting down non-refundable deposit money. If you have a buyer coming into a purchase situation with 30-40% in cash down, then you're not so much worried about the sale contingency because you could always liquidate that deposit and then find another buyer. When you're in other markets with lower priced homes and buyers are putting, you know, 5% down on a $400,000 purchase, if that buyer doesn't close when you're ready to close, you're in a real position of jeopardy.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't do that.
Understandably. So let's talk a little bit about some of the trends. You mentioned earlier, you know, the kitchens, the countertops, the appliances, the different things. What we're learning from years past is that bigger wasn't always necessarily better, and that bigger homes had much more expenses. They had, you know, heating costs that a lot of people didn't take into consideration, particularly for these colonials that had the two-story entrance or the two-story family room. Cooling costs were much more money. So we're seeing houses getting smaller, and according to a survey by the National Association of Home Builders, the average size of a new single-family home is expected to be 2,152 square feet, which is 10% smaller than it was in 2010. Do you agree with this?
So, you know, statistics are complicated, and I didn't do well with them in college, but I have a knack for memorizing them.
Well, there's lies, there's damn lies in their statistics.
Exactly. 95% of statistics are made up on the spot, and
yes,
98% are believed if said with conviction.
Mm-hmm. Lincoln said that on the internet.
Feel free to use that
Lincoln
one.
Lincoln said it on the internet.
And I got
very
that on
funny.
Facebook. So, what you'll see, just overall trend, is if you're using average versus median, it changes it a little bit. But overall trend, 1970s homes were about 1,700 square feet. Going into the recession, they were up in the mid-2,000 range. We saw them come down. We're following the historical trend perfectly. All of the talk during the recession that people's desires had changed. There was a wonderful book, and I'm forgetting. You sound so much smarter if you can quote an author's name, but I can't remember it. A woman wrote a book. It was called The Not-So-Small House. She was an architect. It's amazing work that she came up with. The reality is, while there's a demand for it and there's some builders that excel at it, we're Americans. When they stop selling me a supersized fry, I just buy a large and a small at the drive-thru. Right, Scott?
I hear that.
So people want the most house they can afford. And also our financial system guides them to it. So think about it. You guys as brokers know, what do you look at when you check, is that price sound reasonable? When you're looking in the MLS and you want to know, is that price sound reasonable?
Well, according to comps and square footage.
Square footage. Yeah. You look at price per square foot. The MLS actually breaks it out, right?
Mm-hmm.
Shows you right there the asking square footage. So if I add 10% to the size of a home, it doesn't cost me 10% more to build. The most expensive features of a home are the foundation, the roof, and the kitchen, and the bathrooms. That's it. Those four things. So if you take a house and you take, hold everything else constant, 2.5 baths, kitchens, however many square feet, however many feet of cabinets, square feet of granite, and you just say, you know what, make the master bedroom 20 square feet bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Make the den underneath it, the living room, the great room, whatever room we call that, make that room 20 square feet bigger, too. You
I
just added 40 square feet that didn't really cost me very much.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of those things that we're always watching. People are going to buy the most amount of square foot of house that they can afford.
Mm-hmm.
And the bankers like it because it makes it easier to finance the house. Right? The land cost stays constant. Bigger house, it's less dollars per square foot on the land.
Mm-hmm. So are you seeing houses getting smaller? as we're going into 2016 and beyond, or do you see these larger homes still being very desirable?
You consistently see people buying the most house they can afford. So as the sale numbers are moving up, you'll see the square footages will rise with them.
Okay.
It'll be a graph that tracks.
Well, suppose, like the dinosaurs, what you all we hear is that there's a trend away from the McMansions where there's no setbacks and no backyards. I mean, that's all we hear, that's kind of a thing of the past between the cooling and the heating and...
Right. Everything that, I just said
sound?
Before.
Right.
But he disagrees with that a little bit because he said that the trend is that once the market drops, everyone starts to scale back, but then it does come back again. And those big, larger homes are becoming more and more desirable.
At some point in the next 10, we can write this down and come back to this on this radio show. At some point in the next 10 years, the home sizes will be drastically bigger than they are today and will exceed the size they were in 2004 or 5.
Wow.
What size were those? 4,500?
Depends. No.
About 3,800 square feet, you would say?
Well, that was common in the Hudson Valley. But I'm talking about the national trend. We were at about 2,700 square feet nationally on the median home start.
That's national. I mean,
which is in line with the statistics I said earlier from the National Association of Home Builders, where they said in 2010 the homes were 10% larger than they are today. And today they're averaging somewhere around 2,152 square feet.
Right, but when they use the average, that's pulling down by the existing housing stock.
Okay,
so what we look at is the median new house starts.
Okay.
So the starts last year were about 2,400 square feet. Now this year they're 2,500 square feet. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of, it gets rid of the history of what was old, so we can just see what's being built. In the Hudson Valley, things get a little bit skewed because our zoning is so difficult.
Let me ask you this.
Why is that?
Okay, go ahead.
Why is it?
Mm-hmm.
Why is our zoning so difficult?
Yes.
That's a really good question. New York State has a fundamental problem called home rule. Scott, you're probably familiar with this. Law school days, right? Home rule says that the government at the most smallest local level has total control. Sounds like a great idea. Sounds really democratic,
like a village,
right?
Ordinance.
Yeah, so if I live in the state of New York, the county of Orange, the town of Warwick, and if I lived 5 miles to the left, I'd live in the village of Warwick. So it says that the village of Warwick basically gets first dibs at all rules. So what happens? You have this small group of people making decisions that just befit them. So Orange County Citizens Foundation is a great group. They come out with a study, and it says, Americans after 2010 are going to want to live in urban centers and village centers. So we should develop homes and places of business around infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
So extrapolated to Warwick. The village of Warwick has infrastructure. I live in the town. The village of Warwick says we don't want the town's development.
So it's
that not in my backyard combined with home rule. If you look at places like the state of Maryland, the state of Florida, other places where you have regional planning, mm-hmm. where you have one government body looking over the whole county and saying, okay, great, we do want to see development within the urban cores. So Newburgh, Middletown, I keep using Orange County references, I know them a little better. We're going to push the development to you, and we're going to leave, you know, agriculture out in Pine Island. So you can have that regional planning. New York hinders that through that planning.
I've seen
process.
That in villages like Bronxville and Scarsdale, where in the village you can't even put a for sale sign. This is a tiny little shoebox size for sale by broker. No name, small number. So those are the local ordinances. I get that. Just a quick one. Are formal living rooms gone like your parents had? Like we had Christmas Day on, 1 out of 365?
So we used to get a lot of feedback on that from the frontline sales folks, whether they were brokers or in-house people. What we actually started doing was putting floor plans out with no labels. So people gravitate to a center hall colonial. It's a great layout. I'm not saying it's perfect and everybody should take it, but if you give people a blank piece of paper, we do a design build program, and we say, come in with your family, we'll sit you with one of our architects, blank paper, draw away. We'll build you the house of your dreams, mm-hmm. whatever you could come up with. I'll tell you, 75-85% of the people in my career wind up back in a colonial.
Yep.
So they might name, they like in my house, the formal living room is called a studio. It has a plywood floor. My wife has paint and glue dripped all over it. And the kids are in there doing art projects, and she does art projects. It's mm-hmm. great. We have the room that is the formal dining room, if you had labeled it by a traditional architect, has one of those rubber play floors down. And it's filled with wireless microphones for dance shows mm-hmm. for the kids. So I think you're right. The trend has changed how people use their house and how they live in it. how it really gets built isn't all that different.
Really?
Right. I definitely agree with you. You know, back in my Staten Island days, I specialized in new construction. I specialized in high-end homes in new construction there. And we built hundreds, literally hundreds of Center Hall Colonials. And I remember one of the builders said, why don't we change the layout? Get rid of the living room that no one ever uses. We'll change it to a side hall colonial. We'll make the garage bigger. That will give everyone a larger, because above the garage we had the master bedroom. So that was a huge master bedroom with a huge master bath. It was beautiful. And that was the least selling house. And it made sense. The layout made sense. The family room was all open right into the kitchen. It was exactly where you lived. But people gravitated toward the formal Center Hall Colonial,
that
even
make sense
though they
the
did not use that
smaller
room.
I mean, to me, the great room where you're...
It wasn't smaller. Square footage-wise, it was the same.
No, I'm saying
the layout was changed.
Why have whatever number of feet not being used and heated and cooled? It's not... It's just
a mindset.
Yeah.
But hold that thought. We're going to go to break. If you would like to participate in this conversation here, we can be reached at 914-693-5700.
Have you ever been disappointed because something important you planned went wrong at the last moment? Doesn't that make you really frustrated? That won't happen at Movement Mortgage, where your entire loan process is designed to remove the stress and hassles from getting your loan approved quickly. Movement Mortgage is an Inc. 500 fastest growing company in 42 states, including this area, working hard for you. How? At Movement Mortgage, your loan is processed in 7 days, and we underwrite in the first 48 hours. We expedite your loan and update you continually. When buying your first home, upgrading, downsizing, or even refinancing, call your Movement Mortgage team today. The movement of change is here for you with Movement Mortgage. Call Movement Mortgage at 1-800-516-2119. That's 1-800-516-2119. Movement Mortgage is an equal housing lender. NMLS ID 39179.
The movement of change is here. Movement Mortgage.
This is Paul Oster, the nation's credit repair man, and I want to help you improve your credit. As the CEO of Better Qualified, I've helped thousands of people over the past 10 years. I'm the credit expert for Fox Business News and all the major networks. I'm a certified FICO pro that uses the consumer laws to help delete negative information off of credit reports. We have a debt elimination program that focuses on the laws surrounding collections, judgments, and charge-offs. You could be entitled to up to $1,000 per violation. Call now for your free credit consultation. 888-533-8138. That number again, 888-533-8138, or visit us on the web at betterqualified.com.
Whether you're looking to buy a new home or refinance, Annie Mac Home Mortgage offers competitive rates, a wider array of products, and best customer service available in the lending industry. They have renovation loans for the almost perfect home that just needs a little work. If you want to get a new home built, they have construction to permanent loans with competitive rates and quick closings. Annie Mac Home Mortgage has federally insured FHA loans for borrowers who have had credit problems in the past and no down payment. VA loans for current and former members of America's Armed Forces. Whatever loan product, our licensed mortgage originators will walk you through every step of the process and take the time to work with you individually. Talk to us. Annie Mac won't just get you a mortgage. They will get you the right mortgage for you. Call Annie Mac Home Mortgage at 1-888-242-1313. That's 1-888-242-1313. Annie Mac Home Mortgage is an equal housing lender. NMSL 338923. Annie Mac Home Mortgage is a licensed lender by the Colorado Mortgage Company Registration.
Call Annie Mac.
And we're back in the man cave with Pete Berman. We're talking about new home sales in 2006 and trends. We do have a caller on the line. Hello? Can you hear us?
Hello?
Hello?
Yes, hi. My name is Frank.
Hi, Frank.
How are you doing today?
Pretty good. How are you? Happy New Year.
Same to you.
Thank you.
I just want to comment, just to clarify a little bit what Pete was talking about with new construction. There has to be a greater distinction made. I mean, since you're broadcasting out of Lower Westchester, it's important for many of your listeners nearby to understand that new construction in Lower Westchester is a whole different animal than anywhere west of the Hudson Valley in Orange County and Rockland, Sullivan. Very different. You're talking about a lot of bureaucracies. You're talking about some very difficult building departments. and people just clamoring for properties that could be absolutely terrible and they go for a couple of $1 million. The idea of a new home is great on paper and makes a lot of sense, but to work with a builder, I mean, if you have deep pockets, go for it, have fun with it. Other than that, you're actually better off in Lower Westchester working with a very aggressive broker who's able to find for you something that suits your needs, which is already done, new, or renovated. And that's your best value. That's where you get your best money. Construction loans are very difficult when you're talking about, you know, anything into seven figures. The FICO scores requirements are much higher. The down payments are much higher. And you're sort of at the mercy of a builder, you know, no matter how qualified they can show you their qualifications or their letters of reference. You're really at their mercy, and you're actually better off shopping around for something that's newer, that has, you know, the home warranties, whatever. If you can find it, they are out there. Then try to build new because it's not for the faint of heart.
Frank, you leave. Frank raises. I take his answer off the air. Okay. Frank raises a lot of great points. And he's absolutely right. There are drastic differences between building in low. I would say I would lump Lower Westchester almost into like buying an apartment in the city and renovating.
Yes.
It, you know,
price-wise.
And I'd probably also go west and take that into Fairfield and areas like Greenwich, where land is at such a premium. Some of the areas are in such demand.
Wouldn't that be easy? Sorry.
Ah. I got nailed on the geography.
It's northeast. It's on the
nobody else would have caught it. We were going fast. Oh, there we go. East, you're correct. I believe you're correct.
And north.
So when we talk about those really high-priced areas, absolutely. It's just a different dynamic. One thing that you'll find, and we've had the good fortune to build all across the country on a limited scale. So we've built in Atlanta, Georgia. We've been involved in projects in there was one in Colorado. It was outside of Denver in Colorado. The name of the town's escaping me again. But the idea being wherever you go, you show up ready to build, and people go, whoa, you're in for a treat. The building department here is the hardest anywhere. So that part of what Frank's saying, that's just sort of local folklore.
Okay.
We've done some projects here in White Plains. We've done projects throughout Westchester. Yeah, there's an issue. In some places, it might be sidewalks. In other places, it might be historic. In someplace else, it's watershed, you know, in parts of Ulster County. So everybody's got their nuances. What I would say to Frank is I agree with him. I think most people don't do a good job vetting a new home builder. Most people don't do a good job vetting babysitters or dog groomers, right? People
this is
just
true.
Read people's marketing.
You do a good job with the dog groomer, though.
You do a good job?
With the dog groomer?
Yeah.
I've been through a few dog groomers.
Yeah. Wow. I don't have any babysitters. I have family, yeah.
So
you're right.
What you have to do is you really have to drill in and you have to do your homework. Is the builder a member of the National Association of Home Builders? If they're not, then why aren't they?
Mm,
it costs approximately $700 a year to join your professional organization. We're in an industry that's not licensed. Home builders are not licensed in New York State. So
I want to ask you a quick question. One thing I'm surprised we haven't touched on is prefab. I mean, that's the everything I hear now is it's quicker. I see a house go up and it seems like days, if not weeks, and they're just as good, if not better.
They've come a long way.
Yeah.
There was
a
time that you could
mention.
Really tell when a house was a prefab.
Now I don't think
now
you can tell. In fact, I heard
really
it's superior.
Can't.
So would you speak to that issue?
So we've done some modular projects, and they make sense a lot of times. Where a modular project is great is where you have a highly repetitive product with the rooms that are designed to fit within the footprint of a modular, which is usually limited to about 15 and a half by approximately 52 feet.
So and you're not under the mercy of the weather either, right?
So you're not under the mercy of the weather. So think about, Scott, what you were saying about what a lot of people want for houses, wide open floor plans. If you want a wide open floor plan, a two-car garage with no poles in the middle, all of those things start to filter in. All of a sudden, modular doesn't price compete. So modular makes sense. We've done modular for student housing. That was great. We were able to build it in the summer mm-hmm. while the students were off campus.
Right. Cookie cutter.
Works really well on hotels. It works really well on small houses that are consistent. On the
small houses meaning?
Meaning that they've got smaller rooms and that they line up into the modulars. I mean, they could be big because you could just keep stacking those boxes and putting them end to end.
But the rooms are smaller.
The rooms have to be smaller to fit within. Otherwise, you start losing a lot of those cost efficiencies.
Our
finding is that single family homes from the builder's perspective, if you know how to build, does not usually save you money. But what you'll see is watch the real estate cycle. The next time that that we really go, 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 and everything's great and everybody's making money, look around and see who's buying the modulars. It'll be real estate brokers. It'll be attorneys. It'll be people in the ancillary new home construction services field that probably have some expertise on sourcing land and getting in on a deal. And modular is a great way to build if you don't know how to build.
Mm-hmm. I've heard there's some serious fluctuations even in the cost of plywood and lumber recently. What do you think? Might say anything that's crazy? Because I've heard that that's been a big, big increase.
Our costs are up drastically. You know, that's one of the things that really hurt us during the recession. Drywall consumption went down by this huge percentage. But you know what? Drywall is only produced by, I believe, 4 companies in our country. So they just cut a bigger amount of production. So drywall prices went up every year during the recession. So builders were really boxed in at that time. So the material prices going up just make it harder. But once again, new homes, there's a demand. We're forming families at a rate of 1 million a year in the United States. Mm-hmm. All those people need a place to live.
We don't have enough housing.
I believe right now we have a 62% home ownership rate. So if you say we form 1 million new families, and that's net 1 million, right? That's after people maybe get divorced, that turns 1 into 2. Then somebody gets married, that turns 2 into 1, mm-hmm. all those sort of things. Net growth 1 million, you have a 62% home ownership rate. It means you need another 600,000 houses. Go back, I told you at the beginning, we're only going to build 490,000 this year. That should start creating the price pressure mm-hmm. that makes new homes more attractive. And then what happens? It takes the resale price rises right along with it. We need to get back to a place where we historically are, which is people pay between 3% and 5% more for a new home for all the reasons we talked about. Mm-hmm. They want the newest features.
There's nothing like new. Yep.
There's nothing like new. They want it their way. They want the energy efficiency. They want the warranties. Frank picked up a point, and this is something that everybody should be really cautious and talk to their lawyer about. New home warranties are typically not transferable. They do not run with the property. Frank had a common misconception in the home buying market. If you buy a home one day after a homeowner had purchased it from a builder, that warranty is over.
Specifically states, in fact, new construction contracts are typically untouchable. I represented someone buying in Trump on the west side, and they said, don't bring a pen. We have pens here. And they don't even have people with lawyers because they can't touch or do anything. So the person went in with me. We brought her own pen, and they signed it exactly as it was because they said it wasn't changing.
Yeah, we're a little bit more yielding with that. We recognize that people have an attorney. Every attorney is a little more comfortable with different language. Our overall thing is keep it simple. We're building a house. We expect you to close on it. We're not going to change the down payment. We're not going to change. You have to close within 10 days of the CO or else you're paying $100 a day.
Let me address it because Victoria made a good point because that's what I experienced. I saw some of the terms in the new construction is pretty draconian where when they want 90 days at max after their CO or you're paying a monthly 1/30th of 1%. No, 1/30th of the cost. You could pay a month essentially for being a month overdue. I mean, is it getting pushback from that, the time periods?
We get pushback during the legal negotiation back and forth. And we tell people that's something that we absolutely won't yield on. There's no reason why you can't close a home 10 days after you get the CO. And we take a lot of responsibility in the process. So as we're, you know, 30 days out, we're getting in touch with you, your bank, mm-hmm. your attorney, letting them know it's coming.
But I want Victoria to speak on the point of the realtor, because think about it. 10 days from a CO, that's a Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Now you have to go, like, essentially, you're that realtor. That takes a lot of coordination where you're selling. Where's your client living?
That's
you need
right.
a post-closing occupancy agreement.
And that's exactly why I said you should never get into a contract if your house has to be sold in order to get a mortgage. If you need to qualify, in order to qualify, you have to have that house sold. There should be no
contingency on that. Okay, so it's sold. Where are they living? Temporary housing?
Possibly.
Family?
Possibly. Or they could have it coordinated. I mean, I've done this thousands of times where we really did have it coordinated properly, because a resale only takes X amount of time to close, where new construction will take longer. So usually it's the other way around.
Right.
It's the buyer that is purchasing the resale that's waiting to get in. So as soon as you have that CO, okay, we're ready, let's go. And then everyone just moves along.
We're also seeing a lot of buyers coming out of things that are good, suitable investments. So I would say in the last 3 years, half our buyers came out of a townhouse that they were then going to rent.
Right.
So they were all... And that income now, that was one of those catch-22s. That income is no longer allowed to be counted.
But they don't need the equity from that
place?
They
don't need the equity. They're keeping it and they're renting it because they're doing like an FHA loan, so they only needed 5% down. So as long as they can cash flow both.
Yep.
And think about it, a townhouse.
It's a very smart thing to do.
It's a great way to do it. So then they can move in, and then some of them did sell it a few months later, but most of them rented it out. So they had that luxury. Some did do gap housing, you know, living with family.
Yep.
Tough way to live with kids. I don't know if I could do it. People choose to do that. Or a lot of people were doing, I think what you said, Scott, where they're selling it. They're selling the house that they're in, and they're doing a post-closing occupancy of that home.
But that's limited to really maxing out 45 days. That's asking a lot. That you want to live in my house for 45 minutes. You know what I mean? That's usually it's a two-week kind of really temporary thing.
Yeah, we've seen some where they get them longer, where they're renting.
They do.
And
again,
that.
It becomes part of the negotiation.
Yeah.
You know, so
well, it's tough renting because then they become a tenant. You don't want to give them those rights. And that's a pretty fine point. But it, you know, from the broker perspective, Victoria, it's that's a real, I think, art. And
it is. It's definitely an art.
It makes the broker vet that buyer because although there's no contingency, there's a real life contingency.
It's less about the broker for us and it's more about the attorneys.
Right,
there's
right.
nothing that motivates the buyer's attorney. Like the buyer calling up and going, tomorrow I owe $100 and the day after I owe $200 and $300. And that's what happens. People get, everybody's all excited when they sign the contract. The home's finishing, pick a time of year. And then all of a sudden they get distracted because it's a little bit close to Easter. And it's like, you know what? Do we really want to close the day before Easter? We'll wait 6 days. We'll do it the next week. This keeps people's feet to the fire.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Makes Absolutely. Let's change gears a little bit. Let's bring this on a national level. What markets do you think will stand out in 2016 as far as new homes being built?
I think the first answer is anywhere that has low real estate taxes. Anybody that's got real estate taxes that are no longer an issue. We used to build in the boroughs. That's where I started out.
I remember. I remember your dad very well.
People would come up. You know, your sales effort was really limited. You know, it was a smaller broker community. So people would just come to a job site and they'd say, can we see one? And sure, you'd show them. Really tell them what you're doing, how you're building. It was really nice. We got to interact with the customers. And one in 50 customers would say, what are the taxes? They go, what taxes?
Mm-hmm.
They'd say, the real estate taxes. And you'd look at them and say, where are you from, New Jersey?
Right. Especially in Staten Island. They had the eight-year tax abatements back then. You know, I don't even know if they're still doing that. But there were so many tax programs, and the taxes were very low.
The real estate taxes, when I left Staten Island on a $300,000 townhouse, were about $1,200 a year. And that was with the city picking
That's
up your garbage.
That was a really big shock to me, by the way, when I moved from Staten Island to the Hudson Valley. It was night and day.
Larchmont, it's $25,000. It's crazy.
Yeah.
You want better than that, though.
$12,000. Just add the zero.
Go to Orange County, and you got almost the number in Larchmont with no services. So it's an epidemic problem that we have here in the Hudson Valley. Big issue. But the question is, where are we going to see growth? We're going to see growth in
and
places.
And let's bring it on a national level. Let's
national
come outside
level.
Of New York.
You're going to look at states that have much lower cost infrastructures. The Carolinas, western states, Utah, Nebraska, North Dakota, the ones that are seeing the oil booms for sure have kept their taxes down. Florida, that's a homestead state on your real estate taxes. Communities that are walkable. People don't want to be driving everywhere
too.
They go.
Let's address that after the break. That's an
important
Well,
there's
point.
No break. We're at the end of our show. I know this went very, very
what?
Fast.
Oh.
Yes.
You're lying.
So I am not lying. Pete, I want to thank you very much for your wealth of knowledge and bringing all this information forward
for
our
audience. That's a compliment. I thought like we had 25
for our audience.
Thank you.
Yes, I know. He's fantastic.
I
told you, I only run with the right people. Surround myself with the best, you know?
I sincerely set a break.
That's and no women, apparently. That's right, Scott. Absolutely right. So, Pete, how do we contact you and tell us a little bit about your company? You have 30 seconds.
Absolutely. We're online at rubygroup.com, www.rubygrp.com. My email address is pete@rubycsinconstructionssandservice.com, rubycs.com. My phone number is 845-651-3800.
And where are you building right now?
We just finished a commercial project in Poughkeepsie over in Dutchess County. We have some stuff coming up in Albany. We have projects right now in Orange, Ulster, Sullivan, and might do something in Westchester this summer.
Fantastic. Scott, how do we reach you?
Easily. S. Forcino, like Scott Forcino, at exitrealtygroup.com.
Fantastic. And I, of course, am Victoria Rivadeneira. I could be reached at victoriariva.com, where you can find all my information and all my social media information as well. Thank you very much for joining us on The Revolution, and we look forward to next week.
From the Entergy Studios, it's News Talk 12.